Hello, and welcome to recording number one of Gary Gygax's Knight Errant, an annotated reading. Today is October 11th, 2021. Knight Errant is a little different from the novels that we've been reading, as it is an anthology of short stories. It was published in 1987, the same as the TSR, Artifact of Evil, book two in this series, the New Infinity, Sea of Death, book three in this series, and now Knight Errant, which appears to be stories that take place really in the time period at the end of Artifact of Evil and before the beginning of Sea of Death. So I am assuming that these short stories were probably written during the TSR period. I assume that the Sea of Death was probably a manuscript that Gygax had written during that earlier period as well. And really, book one, two, three flow together, and they form a complete trilogy. At the very end of Sea of Death, there is a conclusion that could be taken as for the whole series, without destroying the Earth or anything, as eventually happens. And from there, Gygax could simply have written adventure stories, and I think I would have been much happier to see that happen rather than City of Hawks or Dance of Demons or Come Endless Darkness. Now, each one of those, they possess a great deal of information, but by that time, City of Hawks is a rewriting of Saga of Old City, then I think it tries to catch you up so that you can find the conclusion. Now, I know some people read five books. They read Saga of Old City, Artifact of Evil, Sea of Death, and then they skip Knight Errant, and they skip City of Hawks, and they finish the books with Come Endless Darkness and Dance of Demons. And I'm not quite sure, but with the changes that go on in City of Hawks to the original story, I don't know how confusing that is, and we'll see ourselves. But my plan is to read them in publication order. Knight Errant, the short stories, is the fourth book, even though it is an anthology. There is also a short story in Dragon number 100 about Gord called At Midnight Black Cat Comes, and that I'm going to include at the very end of our reading of Knight Errant. I'm going to read that short story. And that should be all of the short stories about Gord the Rogue that include Greyhawk. There actually is another Gord story, I believe, in a Michael Moorcock anthology called Pawns of Chaos. But I don't believe that one has anything to do with Greyhawk. Now, Gygax also wrote a short story in a Dying Earth anthology about Jack Vance's Dying Earth, setting. And I don't believe that has Gord in it at all, but I will check. But anyway, we're going to do Knight Errant, all the short stories, and then we're going to do Dragon 100 and do that final Gord short story before moving on to City of Hawks. All right. So, the contents of this book, there are 9 short stories: A Heart of Darkness, A Weird Occurrence in Odd Alley, A Revel in Rel Mord, The Five Dragon Bowl, Twist Buck's Game, The House in the Tree, Cats vs. Rats, Love Laughs at Locks, Catter Pigeon. And those are the 9 short stories in this anthology. And like I said, the story in Dragon 100 is, I believe, At Midnight Black Cat Comes. So we're going to read through all of those before continuing this series. This is a first printing of Knight Errant, and there are no, I don't believe the back has any advertisements except for, oh, it does. I'm wrong. It does say, look for City of Hawks due November 1987, and Come Endless Darkness due March 1988. Very quick, as these are, you know, fairly sizable books. Knight Errant is 398 pages, and I don't believe we have any interior illustrations. The cover illustration is of one of the stories. It really doesn't grab me, and it is a rock grabbing a wizard who's shooting a wand at it, and I believe Gord's standing in front. Illustrated by Jerry Kiritelli, and I'm not sure who that is. Now, in the front page, before we start the story, the other books by Gary Gygax are listed as Saga of Old City, Artifact of Evil, and Sea of Death. So, really, this is the fourth, and there are others due out, but this is book four. All right, I'm going to start now. The text starts on page 7 with the short story, The Heart of Darkness. Enver Zig looked the part of a wizard. His robe was rusty black and appliqued with signs and symbols. The girdle that bound it to his thin waist was likewise covered with glyphs and runes of odd sort. He wore a pointed hat that matched his robe, down to showing crescent moons, stars, and similar depictions of celestial objects. The willowy-shaped wizard was adorned with strange jewelry, benefiting a great spell worker. Befitting a great spell worker. Brooches, amulets, pendants, bracelets, and rings were all of unusual design and unknown workmanship. These precious gems bore arcane engravings and were set with weird minerals. A pair of ritual daggers hung from the old sorcerer's dragonhide girdle, as did a metal case that looked to be about the right size to house a wand. So, yeah, now, just know, I mean, if you recognize the title, Heart of Darkness is, of course, the world-famous novel by Joseph Conrad and the basis of the movie Apocalypse Now. So, Gygax was well aware of that when he wrote this. So I wonder why, you know, he chose that title. Now, we have the introduction of this character, and he is almost a farcical representation of a wizard right here, with a pointed hat and with the robe and everything covered in glyphs and sigils and runes. He's got everything from the girdle that is a dragonhide girdle. He's got all these brooches and amulets, pendants, bracelets, and rings. Everything is set with arcane engravings and weird minerals. And he has a wand on his girdle in a metal case. Almost kind of like a gunslinger might have. So this Enver Zig, he really is, more than your typical wizard right here. All right, I'm going to continue. It is page 7, paragraph 2. There was no way to determine how many years of magic the old sage had under that girdle. But if one were to venture a guess, it would be wise to start with a very high number. His beard was pale gray, and remarkably less bushy than his jutting brows. His eyes were a piercing pale blue, his mouth a narrow slit, barely visible beneath his bristling mustache. His face was drawn and gaunt, an open confession of many years of suffering. This picture-perfect wizard entered the tavern and slowly made his way through the crowd. his eyes darting from one face to another. He smiled inwardly as he spotted the two he sought, and then quickly made his way across the room to the table they occupied. He sat down and stared at the two men seated across from him. His beard stirred, and the thin lips began to open. But before he had a chance to utter a word, the barbarian, staring back, jumped to his feet, slammed his fist down hard on the table, and loudly exclaimed, "You must be a wizard!" The look on the massive barbarian's face resembled that of a young child seeing his first elephant at a menagerie. "No, Chert, he just likes dressing up," the huge hillman's companion mumbled sarcastically. Then he stood and half bowed in the wizard's direction. "Our pardon, good sir. My companion is somewhat awestruck by your appearance. We will leave now, begging your forgiveness for the intrusion," and banal remarks. The small, leather-clad man grasped the barbarian by the arm as he spoke, trying to pull the giant to his feet. "Come on, Chirp. We're annoying this gentleman," Lord said, still trying to budge his uncooperative friend. "Hey, let go of my arm. This is the first wizard I've ever seen up close," the big hillman bellowed without taking his wondering gaze from the figure seated across the worn table. By this time, the other patrons of the Bird in Hand were beginning to stare. The barbarian was so wrapped up in the unusual sight seated across from him that he was oblivious to the attention he was receiving. His companion, however, was not. The slender young thief continued trying to hoist the 6'6" mountain of muscle from the seat to which he seemed to be glued at the moment. All right, break. I wanted to note that this is a tavern called the Bird in Hand. I believe at the time they're in the city of Greyhawk, but we aren't given the location just yet. And one of the nice things about this particular set of short stories, we do get quite a bit of street information, at least street names and the name of inns in profusion. All right. Now, if you've been following what we've been doing or you're familiar with the Gord books, I believe that's not even correct, as Chert should have been encountered magic users back in the Adri Forest when he first met Gord. I believe there was a female magic user on their side, and also a magic users among the retinue of the lead elements of the Great Kingdom's army that was slaughtered at the ambush at Woodford, I believe.
You might have said this, but is this set between the end of Saga of Old City and before Artifact of Evil?
Yes, that's my belief, that almost all these stories, they take place in that time period when Curly Greenleaf and Gord and Chert, they explore this tomb and fight the Catablon demon, and they get this treasure. Curly Greenleaf goes with them to the city of Greyhawk, but leaves them there with the bulk of the more liquid parts of the treasure, gems and such, and coin, and then goes off with the artifact that they discovered in that tomb. Now, at that point, Chert and Gord are left to their own devices, and I believe these short stories take place during that time period.
Thanks.
All right. I will restart. We're on the bottom of page 8, the final paragraph. Throughout this whole episode, Enver Zig remained silent, his eyes betraying no hint of emotion as he stared at the bumbling barbarian and his embarrassed friend. The hillman hunkered down farther into his seat, resisting the attempt at making him stand. Chin thrust into hands, elbows firmly planted on the worn table, he continued to stare at the gray-bearded man across from him as he shouted, "Get away, Gord!" "Yes, sit down," Enver Zig said in a soft tone of voice that, despite its lack of volume, cut through the surrounding noise with a sharp-edged ring demanding obedience. Startled, Gord let loose his hold on the barbarian and slid back onto the bench. "I am Enver Zig," the pointy-capped man said to the two. "You're right, barbarian. I am a wizard. And you are Gord and Chert. The descriptions I was given match well." The last sentence was uttered in the same even tone as those spoken before it, but there was a somewhat bemused quality accompanying it. "Hey, how does a wizard know my name?" Chert sat up straight and scratched his head in a confused, rapid motion. Gord was puzzled too, but for entirely different reasons. The young thief eyed the spellcaster differently now, trying to discern the man's motive and designs. "Descriptions can err," Gord said, trying unsuccessfully to stare down the wizard. When the spellcaster continued to return his steady gaze without so much as batting a single eye, Gord sat back in an attempt to at least appear to be at ease. "Men can bear the same name. Who do you seek?" he asked casually. "A pair of able assistants to accompany me on a dangerous quest." "That's us," Chert said, his head bobbing up and down in ridiculous fashion. Gord shot his careless-tongued friend a quick, threatening look. "Shut up, Chert. This is no casual encounter," he warned through clenched teeth. "Well put, young man," Enver Zig said, his eyes twinkling with something akin to mirth. "I am not offended by your intrusion, barbarian, nor your unseemly words, thief, because I am in this tavern seeking you." "What made you think we'd be here?" Chert inquired innocently. "When I take the time to do research, I do it well," Enver answered, his tone beginning to take on an impatient edge. "Why seek us out?" Gord asked with an equal lack of tolerance, for he didn't like this situation in the least. All right. The wizard ignored the question and addressed the tavern's proprietor instead. "Barkeep, bring these two whatever they wish, and be quick." There was a flurry of activity, and then the wizard tossed a silver noble to the sweating ostler, telling him to keep the change. A small goblet of wine appeared before the black-leathered Gord, and Chert was delighted to find himself the recipient of a huge horn filled with a mixture of stout and ale. Enver Zig nodded, looked squarely at Gord, and then finally explained, "I'm a stranger to Greyhawk, but the fame of its wealth and treasures extends eastward a great way. I come from there seeking a special item, and I am in need of skilled associates to share the rewards." "And the dangers?" "Oh, hell! Who cares about dangers?" Chert said, punctuating his question with a loud belch. The wizard slid his gaze from the black-garbed thief to the brawny hillman. "I quite agree," he said. "With what? My friend's question, or his crude display?" Gord asked sarcastically. Chert shot his friend a hurt look, and the wizard continued, ignoring Gord's remark. "When I came to the city, I made careful inquiries as to able men of fearless disposition who might be a part of a bold undertaking. Your name was foremost amongst those mentioned to me, Chert." You know it. I'm the one to handle tough opposition, Chert said proudly, his great chest expanding and a grin appearing on his face as he spoke. Then he leaned over the table and said in a no-nonsense tone, unless we get our fair share of the spoils, neither of us are interested. Money is not of interest to me, Enver Zig said to Chert with a wave of dismissal. I spent close to 1,000 Z's just locating you two. All right. This mission is sure to bring a wealth of gold, gems, and other riches as well. You and your associate are welcome to all such stuff. I seek but one thing. Gaining it, I am satisfied, and all else is yours. Gord was not pleased. Why us? There are scouts of capable adventurers in Greyhawk. There are scores, pardon me. What made you select our names? Scores, Enver Zig countered. More like a half dozen of real capability and renown. I need no idle mercenaries in this venture. It is far too important to trust to weaklings, and no talent hirelings such as those who hang around the foreign quarters seeking employment. I mean to succeed in my quest. To assure this, I'm offering untold wealth in return. For your fighting prowess, Chert, and such talents as you possess, Gord. Count us in, Chert said, banging his fist on the oaken plank table. Delighted, the wizard extended his hand. Excellent, heroic Hillman. Your boldness is to be commended. Still, I note a look of uncertainty. On your friend's face. I'm in need of both of you, so I will take a moment to try to convince him of my honesty and sincerity in this matter. Agreed. Sure, Wiz or Ziggy. Go ahead and talk, Chert said expansively. Only how about another round? I'm going to be doing some hard work soon, and a horn of brew is sure to make me better at it. The wizard signaled for another draw of the stout nail combination and then explained his story carefully, looking at Gord and not sparing details. I dwell near Sildar Town, a place adjacent to the Ferris Mountains on the border between the Southern Marches and the state of Jodi. As a worker of spells, I adhere to the teachings of Kabak, and likewise the works of his sole disciple, Gigantos, are not unfamiliar to me. It was in the latter, and particularly in the veiled references to so-called Mad Archmage of similar name, that I first discovered a clue to what I seek. The nature and form of the item I quest after is of no import to you. It is of magical power, and unless one is a And unless one is a Doomer Crafter, steeped in the arcane arts, useless. In any case, learning what I did, there was but a single course upon open to me. Deciphering the clues given, I traveled west to Greyhawk, for in the realms of the former Master's Fortress, is hidden the prize I seek. Is what I say clear so far? All right, break. Yeah, that cover looks more like a turkey vulture than a giant rock. And Chert is pretty, they have Chert for the comic relief right here as being a real barbarian. Now we are given again many words that are New Infinity's versions of what we would more likely recognize in, you know, the TSR talk. Sildertown, Ferris Mountain, Southern Marches, and Joheed. Now, the Ferris Mountains are, of course, probably the Iron Mountains. Sildertown, I'm not sure of. Southern Marches may be South Province, and I'm not sure about Joheed. So, again, I believe there's been research done that does reveal what these New Infinities terms actually reference in our normal setting. All
right. The Madar Archmage is probably Zagig, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. That's it. And in fact, I think we get that. And you notice that this man's name is Enver Zig. So, like Zagig, his name is Zig.
Maybe he's a distant relation.
I believe that's something that the wizard himself believes, that he must be some distant relation to, you know, Zagig. Now, it's comment that, you know, Commodore doesn't like Chert, and he was a low point. Now, Gord and Chert are really a poor man's Fafhrd and Mauser, and Chert, in particular, is a very flat character. You know, he is written in, you can describe Chert in a few lines. He is this friendly barbarian, you know, not of, and it's unfortunate. It was, Gygax could be, I think, a better writer than this. When you look at how quickly all these manuscripts are coming out, like I said at the beginning, this book is September 1987. We had Artifact of Evil come out from TSR in 87. We had Sea of Death come out later in the summer in 87. And now this book in September. And they're claiming that they're going to get City of Hawks out in November and then Come Endless Darkness in March of 88. And at this point, you have to... Now, I just wonder when Gygax wrote all this material. Now, when he basically handed over control of TSR to the Blooms, and especially went out to California, I wonder how much he had been writing. Perhaps he had the idea, too, of doing a novel and then like a Gord movie or something. Because he was getting involved out there, you know, with the cartoon show, and maybe his ideas were there, or a TV show. Maybe he was thinking of Gord as some kind of TV character. But at some point, all this material was written. The two manuscripts obviously got published by TSR, and then right away the third with Sea of Death, and this is the fourth collection of short stories. I am rather surprised that he wasn't having these appear, the short stories appear in Dragon magazine. His very earliest work appears in the very first issues of Dragon. They concern the Great Kingdom and a character called Dunstan, but they aren't really, if they're associated with the campaign, they really seem, those, that early Dragon story seem more like something that would have been part of his first home campaign. And it is very much pre-Folio and the regular Greyhawk setting that we're familiar with. Whereas these novels Gygax really embraced the published setting and expanded on it in, you know, in a very huge way by writing all these novels set there. Now it's 1987, it's New Infinities, and we right away start seeing the anti-kind of Gygaxian material that was being poured out later. And yeah, you know, I can see the characters, Curly Greenleaf, Nabon Geller, really so far the only interesting, much more fuller characters have been Viron the demon, Leda the clone of Ecclavdra. They've been a little bit more of a full character than we've seen with a lot of the others that have been out there. I liked Melf, and I don't know if Gygax had based Melf more on what Luke had been doing in the game, and so Melf is a little more of a full character than I think a lot of them that we were presented with. And Melf makes his appearance in Artifact of Evil. All right. I am going to restart, and we are on page 12. And I believe it is the second paragraph down from the top. Oh, no. Sure, Wizard Ziggy, go ahead and talk, Chert said expansively. Only how about another round? I'm going to be doing some hard work soon, and a horn of brew is sure to make me better at it. I'm sorry. We jumped, let me jump ahead a little here. We did this larger paragraph, and here is where it talks about Sildertown, adjacent to the Ferris Mountains, on the border between the Southern Marches and the state of Joheed. And so that would be the Iron Mountains, and I'm not probably the South Marches, yes. And, so, you know, and then we have these magic users, Tabak and Gigantos. So we can wonder about their exact nature. All right, so it is the final paragraph on page 12. And he had just mentioned that he was talking about the ruins, you know, the ruins of Castle Greyhawk right here. All right. It is well known that the labyrinthine dungeon catacombs and maze of subterranean passage beneath the ancient castle once held a conglomerate of monsters and plethora of treasure, all there at the whim of the Lord Archmage who ruled within. In bygone years, many sought to plumb the depth of this underground for glory and riches. And why not? With the master gone, who would say them nay? It is widely known that fabulous beasts and incredible treasures were found and disposed of. Of course, the stream of adventurers bound to become wealthy or die trying was so heavy that not even the fiercest of guardians could forever prevail. Expeditions came, some succeeded, and Greyhawk City grew rich from them. Now, years later, who ventures to the ruins? Few, the wizard said in answer to his own query. And this is no surprise. Tales told of even greater treasure, deep beneath the fallen fortress, were shown to be untrue. Vast, empty complexes of passages and chambers, bones and deserted mazes, speak louder than stories told in alehouses. You are yarning in such a place yourself, Gord interjected dryly. Just so, Enver Zig said humorously. I have frequented such places as this for a fortnight, seeking vainly for associates able to meet my demanding standards. After paying over sufficient silver, your names came to the fore. Your repute is high, and if your true qualifications come anywhere near the whispered attributes I have been told, then our venture is assured. What can we hope to find, mage, in a subterranean labyrinth you yourself have just said is bare of wealth, but possibly not of undesirable creatures? Enver Zig compressed his thin lips and into an invisible line, shaking his gray locks as he did so. You listen well, young thief, but you hear not. Recent explorers report not. That is not a statement of condition, but rather their own ineptitude. My information is such that we will delve far deeper than those without such intelligence could ever hope to do, into the very heart of the lightless domain beneath the castle. Many untouched places remain, crypts laden with gold, chests filled with pearls and gemstones, even magical stuff suitable for swordsman or thief. All of that is yours. All. Only one prize must I have, and will have. My spells and powers and your skills as fighters will clear out any who should think to prevent us from attaining our goal. The fruits of all such labors are waiting for you. Let us off. I'm ready, Chirp bellowed in his eagerness, his eyes shining with visions of hoarded loot. Not quite so fast, Gord said, sitting calmly. What assurance do we have of the truth of your claims? The wizard's face darkened at the suggestion that he might be dealing in lies, but he visibly brought himself under control again. I understand. You must hear words which are mere fabrications in order to persuade you to join schemes of uncertain merit. My sincerity and the truth of my assertions is demonstrable only in the doing. Yet I can show good faith. Agree to accompany me, and I will here and now pay over a sum sufficient to make even a fruitless quest worthwhile. How large a sum? The young thief asked suspiciously. 10 gold orbs, each. We're your men, Gortchirk cried, nearly upsetting the table, as he rose and eagerly thrust forth his huge palm. Come on, Gord. It is high time to stop this useless bantering and be about our quest. Gord rose slowly to his feet, and against his better judgment, slowly extended his right hand. There was something about this wizard that made the young thief more than a little uncomfortable. All right. Right here, we have, mostly it's the storyline going on right here, but we do have the setting of a pretty much a typical, adventure beginning here with the wizard coming in and finding the men in the inn to go on this fabulous quest. We're given a little background of Castle Greyhawk here, and it fits in with most of the known lore. We have the Mad Archmage, of course, Zaggy, who has stalked the castle. And at this point, the castle has been plundered many a time. Not really talk of the dangers of it, but there's a lot of talk as he's trying to enlist Gord and Chirp about the fabulous treasures and fantastic beasts that have been encountered so far by people going into the castle. And not a mention of a god trap yet, I don't believe. All right, so I'm going to continue. It is page 14 and the final paragraph. The once magnificent castle could be seen from any vantage point in the city. It was on a high hill, about 3 miles away from the northern verge of Greyhawk. The only road, at one time smooth and easily accessible, had slowly deteriorated into little more than a rutted trail that was seldom, if ever, used anymore. Local folk shunned the area, claiming that the things that dwelled beneath the pile of stones came forth at night to waylay the unwary. The land surrounding the castle for approximately a mile in any given direction was a tangled wilderness, save for that to the north of the castle's great mound. There lay a great bog with pools said to be bottomless and mires of deadliest sort. All right, so here's our description. I like the description that from anywhere within the city you can look and see the ruins of Castle Greyhawk up on its hill. And very suitable for what Zagig would have wanted. So I think that is not been mentioned before in, like, say, Saga of the Old City, about the visibility and the prominence of the old Castle Greyhawk here. Now, it is a little distant, only 3 miles distant from the city itself. And here, Gygax has the road in disuse and the surrounding area for about a mile of wilderness, and to the north, a mire, a marshy mire of great bogs and bottomless pools. All right, so I'm going to restart right here. It is page 15, second paragraph, down from the top. Gordon Chert had, in fact, been to the deserted ruins before. They had dared the dungeons underneath, and after considerable exploration had decided their time was more profitably spent in other endeavors. That adventure had begun when, by sheerest chance, the two had stumbled upon the lair of a small group of outlaws. It was a confrontation neither side expected, but Gord's lightning-like reflexes had enabled him and Chert to have the advantage. A hard-fought combat that followed earned both the young thief and his hulking companion numerous wounds. The surviving outlaws begged for quarter and received it from the two in return. Gordon Chert took all the holdings these brigands possessed in ill-gotten gains. The sum was trifling, but the haul included a map showing a place far below the castle where other bandits had hidden a vast store of loot. Gordon Chert had enlisted the captive outlaws into their ranks, followed the map, and ended up finding nothing but horrors and disgusting things that haunted the stony tunnels and rooms there. It should have been more than a sufficient reason for both, but here they were again, footsteps echoing in the vaulted hall, heading for the place in the center of the old castle. Enver Zig was leading them directly to the broad steps that spiraled down to the endless levels that lay under Castle Greyhawk. The wizard was moving with great assurance, and he was showing not the least hesitation in the process. There could be no doubt that he knew at least the initial stage of this venture. And right here we have, again, that Gord and Chert have already ventured in and having found nothing. So that, I think, it sets this in the future of the early game. And here we have Castle Greyhawk. It's already been well looted, and to the point that Gordon Chert had already, not found anything worth their time. But it's, as Enver Zig is pointing out, that there is more more here than is suspected. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 16 and the second paragraph. That door there leads to a massive passages beyond, the barbarian volunteered as they reached the end of the stairway. Then he added almost proudly, Gord and I have done this before. Enver Zig, seemingly surprised by this revelation, turned his back to the heavy portal. This is not the way we will take barbarian, he told the hillman flatly. Your past experiences are nothing to me. Come. He strode to a place where the curved wall was built out to receive the last of the big steps. The wizard fumbled around for some time before finally managing to move a small stone. Now shove against the slab, he told Chert, pointing as he said it. The barbarian gave a casual shove, and the rectangle of hewn granite swung inward. I'll be dipped in boiling. Take this lantern and go down, Zig commanded, cutting off Church's sentence. These steps should take us down to the place where we will begin our quest. Batshit, Church finished, a mixture of surprise and determination on his face. He accepted the proffered lantern and started down the stairs, bowing his massive trunk in order to fit through the little opening. You next, thief, said the wizard. I will remain in the rear to guard us from any attack from that direction, and so that I can have my spells ready when needed. Gord readily complied. Chert was already several steps down and muttering rapidly. While the lantern revealed an opening, an open web-strewn shaft, the stairs were hewn from its rock sides, and how far the circular opening went down was indeterminable, for the feeble light that the hillman held aloft illuminated only 15 or 20 feet ahead. But the cold draft coming upward indicated they had far to go. There was a soft rumbling from behind. Enver Zig had closed the secret entrance to the shaft behind them. A move that pleased Gord. Now, if anyone wanted to follow them into this particular part of the dungeon, they would be hard-pressed to figure out how to gain entrance. Shun those cracks and fissures, Enver Zig hissed so as Chert stopped to peer into one of the many narrow openings carved into the stone walls of the passage. Those are distractions of no interest, leading to places where hostile things lurk. Oh, the barbarian said soberly. He proceeded to get a better grip on his massive battle axe, and then hurried Oh, the barbarian said soberly. He proceeded to get a better grip on his massive battle axe, and then hurried past the crumbling fissure. They came to the bottom of this hidden shaft after climbing down more than 200 feet as far as Gord could reckon. Considering the altitude of their starting point, the young thief estimated that they must now be no less than 300 feet beneath the hilltop on which the fortress was built, and possibly 50 feet beneath normal ground level. All right, break. So we have here a description of the first of these hidden entrances. Now, How this lines up with anything else within the castle, it's hard to tell. So they come in, they find this circular stairwell down, and they proceed down to it. Chert tells them of this door that leads to further passages, but Enver Zig here knows of a secret passage. He pushes a block aside, and then Chert is able to push open the secret passage. Within that passage are steps down, and Chert and Gord head on down, and it goes down several, what is it, at least 200 feet. And at that point, Gord figures they may be up to 50 feet below the Earth's surface, even below the normal ground level, because they were up on a hill. All right, so that is a new area that Gygax is describing for Castle Greyhawk. I'm not sure how it is reflected in the published adventures, but in the story, it is something that hitherto is not known to have been explored. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 17 and the final paragraph. The place was chilly and damp. Strange runes and symbols covered the granite walls. Water dripped into a shallow pool that dominated the center of the place. And slight trickles ran down the walls and added to the dark liquid. Again, the exit was obvious. A pair of rusted iron doors were set in the solid rock. "What now?" Gord asked the wizard. "Ignore those," Zig said, nodding toward the iron doors. "The master of this place put many distractions and diversions throughout his playground. Look for a mark of some strange sort, and on the stone floor circling the pool," he commanded. Gord, Chert, and Zig circled the pool several times, each set of eyes intent on discovering some sort of marking. Though none of the three knew exactly what form that would take. All right. So Chris has put up the expedition to the ruins of Greyhawk. And I wonder, I do have a copy. I have not read it through yet. I do wonder if this particular description is included in that adventure. Now, the expedition book actually also has a good synopsis of the City of Greyhawks and the Green Dragon Inn to start you off. And they are on the path of what we're doing right here. And it would be interesting to know what path that they actually did follow and what is written about. So that definitely is on near the top of my reading list and indexing list, if I'm able. All right, we're getting near the end. I'm going to continue. It is page 18. We've just come down. We've crossed down into that secret passage. Now, at the bottom, about 50 feet below the Earth's surface, there's a pool that's collected and a set of rusted iron doors. And Zig has told them to ignore the doors. And looking for some kind of marking around the pool. I'm going to restart. It's page 18. And it is 5 paragraphs down. "I'm getting dizzy," Chert said after his fifth lap round the pool. "Keep still and keep looking." Gord stopped so suddenly that the clumsy barbarian, following close on his friend's heels, was not able to halt in time to avoid the collision. Gord, who was promptly knocked off his feet, donned a wry expression and stared up at a sheepish-looking Chert. "Jeesh, Gord, "What are you doing down there?" the lumbering barbarian asked innocently. "I wanted to get a closer look, Chirk," Gord said in a patronizing tone. He waved aside the hand Chirk offered to assistance and pushed himself away from the ground. But halfway up, the observant thief gave a low whistle and crouched back down. "I think I see what we're looking for," he said softly to the wizard, indicating a faint scribbling on the stone floor. Brushing past the dumbfounded barbarian, Enver Zig came to where Gord crouched. "Aha! That too, that is the mark I sought," the spellcaster concurred. When Gord pointed to the etchings on the ground, the wizard went immediately to the bare wall of the shaft and began searching there for a matching pair, chiseled into the stone. Gord and Chirp followed his lead, both of them amazed at the various signs, symbols, and runes covering the wall. "It is here, just as I thought," the wizard exclaimed excitedly. "Quickly now, both of you. Stand in the pool, and I will join you momentarily." "Are you keeping track of all this, Gord?" Chirp whispered to his friend. "Yeah, for what it's worth, I am, Chirp. But you had better try to remember a few things, too." The wizard was casting some sort of spell. Gord was unable to fathom what the Deomer was, but after making several passes in the air and uttering some tongue-twisting syllables, Emperor Enver Zig wrapped the wall with a small silver rod, turned and dashed into the pool, the spray from the hurried entry wetting both adventurers as they stood in the ankle-deep water. "Yeah, we're going to drown," Chirk cried as he noticed that the water had suddenly started to rise rapidly. Or were they sinking? That was Chirk's unanswered question. All right, we're just about done right here for the night. And I think this is a good place to end here. So we've covered a little description of Castle Zagging. No astounding encounters yet. But just at the beginning here, we're given... a place, we should be mapping here. We're given some description of the secret entrance, and now something about, looking toward that pool and not the more obvious iron doors. All right. So it's 6:58. I'm going to, and a secret door and cryptic runes. So I'm going to end right here. And we will continue. Now, keep in mind, there's no show tomorrow. There's no show Thursday. So we will be back Wednesday. And then with this book, I'm going to be doing 5 days reading a week. And Dark on Tuesdays and Thursdays. All right. Well, that was recording number one.